We want to talk a little bit about the price volatility situation. We're also going to talk overall about the use of fertility inputs in the state of Mississippi. My co-author is Rocky Lemus, who is an extension forage specialist for us, who does doing an excellent job. Although the first 80-something percent of this presentation is going to be dealing with row crops and other annual crops rather than forages. As y'all know, we've had a rather interesting time in the world of fertilizer prices and recommendations over the last 15 to 18 months. About 15 months ago, urea was selling for about $1 a pound of the nitrogen in it, or maybe a little bit more in Mississippi. Thank goodness we've calmed down for my benefit in that. First thing we're going to do, though, is have a brief geography lesson, a little social geography, a little agricultural geography. One thing I've found about Mississippi, most people think they know something about it, but they don't know what they know is usually wrong. This is the land use data from 2005, back when we used to grow cotton in Mississippi. Primarily, the row crop production is in this portion of the state. That would be the famous Mississippi Delta, flat alluvial plain along former channels of the Mississippi River, current and past. It's now known in the environmental community as the Yazoo Mississippi River Delta Basin. So you can't tell exactly what the individual fields are. This, again, this is Landsat data. The red in there is cotton production. We've had some significant changes in our crop mix in the past few years. However, it is affecting our overall nutrient use. I'll talk about the Delta in terms of annual agronomic crop production. This is looking at the production of those crops in the state of Mississippi from 1983 through 2008 on a percentage basis. 1983 is the beginning. That was the pick year, the payment in kind year, followed not long thereafter by the institution of the Conservation Reserve Program, which shifted significant acreage or hectareage in the state out of row crop production and stabilized us at about 75 to 80% of our annual row crops are produced in those 18 counties in the northwest part of the state. What we grow there, the blue line, the lower line here is corn. This is starting in 1930. Going down with the acreage went down to about 1970 when it was not really significant different from zero in the state. We're hot, we're humid. We quit using animal power to do the cotton. The old rule of thumb was you grew an acre of corn for every acre of cotton that you produced to feed the mules. Cotton was the bell cow of agronomic production in the state. You can see the percentage of cotton has gone down, come back up, and we've had significant loss in cotton acreage in the last few years. We've gone from 1.4 million acres just a few years ago to about 290,000 acres this current year, which is a significant decrease, of course. It's a significant change in the socioeconomic considerations of the communities in the Delta. Because if you don't grow cotton, you have no need for gins, so forth and so on. If you grow corn instead of cotton, you have a need for harvest equipment and grain bins that we did not previously have. So significant changes going on in Mississippi agriculture over time. Soybeans, the dotted line, we're actually relatively stable. About 45-50% of our row crop acreage is in soybeans year in, year out. And the current conditions, if the soybeans had not been harvested at this point, they're probably ruined because we have had a significant rainfall event in 2009 in the fall. In Starkville, we normally get 53 inches per year. We're at 76 or 77 inches for 2009 at this point. And it's varying levels of that wet that's across the state. Again, this is looking at the shift, looking at the difference. The shift is going from cotton to corn over time in the state. Cotton, you can write this down based upon the ERS survey data starting in 1989 up until recently. We use 109 pounds of nitrogen per acre, plus or minus 6 pounds year in, year out. We use about 50 or 60, 70 pounds of P2O5. At this point, we're using about 80 pounds of potash per year. We were up to about 100. In the last few years, that's gone down. Year in, year out, that is the fertility program for cotton production in the state. So you can see as we have this shift from cotton to corn production, our nitrogen use is probably going to go up. Our phosphate level is probably going to go up. Potash level use is going to go up as we make this shift over time. Tracing what we've done previously in the fertilizer sales, this starts with the 82-83 fiscal year. Nitrogen levels, nitrogen sales levels. If we did a line through there, we'd be relatively stable. Again, we have a pretty stable use of nitrogen use rate in cotton production in the state. Potash use peaked in the early 90s, has gone down. And phosphorus levels have been fairly stable over time. And there's a reason for that we'll see in a minute. I am involved in some projects with our Department of Environmental Quality and some stakeholder groups looking at potential nutrient reduction strategies for water quality purposes in the Mississippi Delta region. And as part of this, I have been looking at productivity data as well as the fertilizer use data, and starting with 1930, because that's when most of my available data starts. I've got fertilizer sales that are originating then. This is the productivity and the index I've created working with six annual crops in the Mississippi Delta, corn, cotton, soybeans, rice, wheat, and for a significant part of this era, oats, because we grew them. This is the rolling 5-year productivity means using the concept stolen from the plant breeders, where we take the mean 5-year rolling means over time, starting with the beginning of the data series in 30. Going up to present, we've had significant changes in productivity over time with this interesting period in the late 60s and 70s. The plant breeding literature, Bill Meredith with ARS, is blaming this on the too narrow of a genetic base on the cotton part of it. But I also think that we've also got some indication here of the effect of government programs. As plantings increased at certain points, we started putting crops on soils that really didn't need to have annual crops growing on them. And it was beginning with Conservation Reserve Program. We reforested significant parts of eastern Mississippi, and our productivity for agronomic crops has increased since then. Another way of looking at it is productivity for land area without the rolling average, showing that we have had a significant increase over time. This is interesting in respect of some of the previous talks I've heard today, looking at the ability to feed the people that are coming. How do we produce this? This is starting in the 1930 period going to present. This is nitrogen production efficiency, phosphate production efficiency, potash production efficiency. Looking at this index of annual crops per unit of the fertilizer that is used in P2O5 or K2O based upon the sales. It was pretty high in this era. This is pre-World War II. This is when we were still using a lot of what we call really good agronomy now. Cover crops. We were growing a lot of legumes for the fertilizer, as a green fertilizer, because we had to feed the animals, and also we did not have significant supplies of inorganic fertilizer available. Looking at the fertilizer that was used at that point in time, it was largely guano. Then we have World War II come along. Also, I need to mention also on the economics of this, the arrow goes away. This high point when we had the most productivity, this is in 1930. And the fertilizer sales in 1930 are a multiple of the fertilizer sales in each of the next 5 years. The Depression was in full force then. People were not spending money they did not have. So our productivity continued to increase somewhat, but what we were putting in terms of purchased inputs decreased. And over time, as we've integrated all the things that we know as agronomists and soil scientists that have gone into modern agriculture, has come into being post-World War II era. Anhydrous ammonia was really commercialized in Mississippi starting in 1943, 45, 46, and became really commercial available in 47, 48 period of time after the war, and contributed to the increase. This is looking at how we have increased the production based upon using the first 5 years as a base period for nutrient, fertilizer nutrient. The red, the circles, is the nitrogen. This is the percentage of the 1930-34 mean produced at that point in time. We're up at, if I did the real statistics on this, that it's in the plans for the next couple of weeks, this has developed a plateau. Phosphate, we've not applied a lot of phosphate in Mississippi. We're pretty static over the whole period of time. The potash numbers go up again significantly in the early part of the 90s. But that's history. What is our current challenge, though, as I've talked about earlier, was dealing with the volatility of the last 18 months in the fertilizer market. This is looking at the prices of nitrogen, phosphate, and potash reported in April by the National Ag Statistics Service each year on a per-pound basis for common materials. Y'all should know all this, but we have a spike here. And I did not put in the absolute spike that we had last summer, because when you go from a static price of 14 cents a pound for potash forever, as my friends in the industry tell me, to 70-something cents, that's a pretty significant increase. Phosphate went from a 26-cent static price for a long time up to 70-plus cents. Nitrogen was actually a pretty calm one there for a while. Then it shot up after April of last year. So this hit the ground. This hit our producers in Mississippi. Again, we have a pretty set cotton nutrient management program. We're learning how to grow corn. Soybean production, according to Ag Statistics, Economic Research Service, soybeans, about 10% of our growers put on about 10, 12, 15 pounds of nitrogen per year and about 40 pounds of phosphate, which sounds suspiciously close to me to about 50 pounds of DAP being applied per acre to about 10% of our soybeans. That is always reported for fertility input on soybeans. So, from an extension standpoint, we're dealing with this. I've got producers in shock. I've got area agronomy agents that are in shock worse than the producers, because this is a unheard of level of prices in Mississippi and across the nation. What we decided to do, we were going to be brutally honest with these people. We helped some of them with a new decision tool. We'll cover that later on in the presentation. And part of being brutally honest with them, we gave them stuff, we gave our extension folks stuff that we had kind of kept on the down low from them for some time to avoid giving them too much information. But most of our recommendations were developed by a gentleman who unfortunately passed away earlier this year, Dr. J.D. Lancaster, who did not publish a lot. He did outstanding science, but it's hidden in the theses in the library. We went back to the well. We went and got, or to use another metaphor, we went and got those stone tablets to show people where our recommendations come from, what our recommendation philosophy is. Some of you may know we use a different extractant in soil testing and base our recommendations on in Mississippi than just about any place else in the world. We do that because we like it. We do it because we have a sound scientific basis for it based upon Dr. Lancaster's work. It works well for the range of soils we have in the state. in terms of pH. Basis for nitrogen recommendations. Those nitrogen application rates for cotton, I think they did come down on stone tablets from the mount. But we have spent significant resources in the last few years refining nitrogen recommendations for our other crops, and have refined them to be more responsive in the last few years. We do not have the cool weather needed for a soil test for nitrogen in our state. We've worked with this, and it's really hard for us to predict. As I talked about earlier, we have a very wet fall this year. It's very hard for us to get a prediction value for nitrogen availability for us. I heard earlier talking about 10 to 14 pounds of nitrogen per year percent of organic matter. Again, in the Delta part of the state, falling back on 100 years of cotton production, much of that cotton production relied on a lot of tillage. We're warm, we're wet. Our organic matter runs from 0.5% to 1.5%. So we don't have a lot of native things to build upon with nitrogen. We also looked at and talked with our folks, our in-house people in Extension Service and our growers about alternative fertilizers and some of the products that are out there. So how we address this, we summarized our recent research on alternatives, efficiency agents that we've done, the GEMS. We trained our area agents. We did an in-service for those folks in August of 08, probably at the peak of the hysteria of the prices. Provided a 10,000-page background white paper to every extension office, which was turned out to be a very good tool for us, because when the agents called with specific questions, we could point them back to the chapter and verse where it had been covered in the background information that they'd been given. We utilized our regular outlets for dealing with the general public, our monthly newsletter, which was Agronomy Notes in 2008, it's Mississippi Crop Situation in 2009, magazines, and communication. What were we telling them? We told them, if you're not soil testing, start now to manage the P and the K. Apply for the best efficiency. Use byproducts if it worked into their system. Basic soil fertility management to deal with what was turning into an emotional situation for some people. Soil testing. Going back to our soil test results from our lab using the Lancaster derived extracted, going back to 1974-75 physical year, I found them all but 2 years. Looking at the results from the Delta, those 18 counties where we grow 75 to 80% of our row crops, looking at the total samples from those counties. And 9 counties are 100% Delta, 9 counties are partial Delta. So we just said if they're growing a row crop in it in that county, we said it was in the flat part of the county. Assumption we made. What you probably can't tell from back there, this is looking at soil test P. The tall bar, I will tell you, every one of them is high, median, high test soil test P. We have very high native soil test levels of phosphorus in particularly in the Delta. Not so much in the other parts of the state, but where we go to row crops, we have very high levels of soil test P. I will say that the Hill counties contributed significantly to the low numbers on the P. Potash. Now, this is a different story. And I talked about, showed that we sold a lot of potash. We used quite a bit of potash up until the mid-90s. And we've had something of an adoption change. We don't really know why. We do have pretty high soil test potash. 60-70% of the samples over this time period, 35 years, have tested high or very high for potash, but we still use a significant amount. We found that newer cotton varieties in the 80s that were utilized at that point in time, their potassium use went at hot part of the year to me, being a Kentuckian, not a Mississippian, was more than the soil had the ability to give. So we would give supplemental potash even when the soil test is very high on these high testing soils. Kind of like in some Midwestern locations where you have a banded phosphate application on a very high, provide a little boost for the crop at the early part of the year. We need to provide a boost for that cotton crop in a warm part of the year. So that practice, extra to the regular recommendations, went into place about 1990. But for whatever reason, it seems to have declined since that time, based upon the annual survey data, based upon the sales data. Really honest, what we had not really shown our folks was our recommendation philosophy. Very low for us is 0 to 18 pounds. I'm sorry if you're metric, but I'm an extension person. Everything over, this is PPM, I'm sorry, over 144 pounds to the acre is very high for us. Between 37 and 72 PPM is a maintenance range. 0 to 36 is a buildup range. I'm sorry, this keeps flicking on me. These are our levels. We do not use an equation for this recommendation basis. Just to review, in the interest of time, I'm going to skip through that because hopefully y'all know that. Cation ratios pop up from time to time in Mississippi. We have not shown them to work well in our conditions. But in our recommendations, over time, going back to the original data, this is from a thesis. The original work was proposed and adopted by the soil testing recommendation people in the 80s at Mississippi State. After comparing the Lancaster extractant in the process of two theses with 12 other extractants, including all the other ones that are currently used in the Southeast, we found that our Lancaster extractant worked well, again, for our soils. Our recommendations, we do make a slight buildup recommendation in the very low category, 120 pounds potash and phosphate and potash. And then we go up to maintenance with the low and medium. That's where, in dealing with our extension people, you know, folks, very, very important to get the soil test done, know where we are in this area, because we do make a build-up recommendation in our regular recommendations. Maybe we don't need to do that if the fertilizer is a dollar a pound for active ingredient. Briefly about alternative production, where we don't grow row crops, we may grow chickens. We have 12 counties in the state that are pretty large producers. This is looking at estimating the tons of litter produced from per year from 90 to 2005. We've been on a linear increase, so we have lots of material available. In those 12 counties where we grow the chickens, very low is the dark blue at the bottom, high is the light blue at the top. Over time, starting and again in the 89-90 time frame period, looking at soil test results for forages coming through our soil testing lab, we've gone from about 25% testing very high to about 35%. So we have some soils that may or may not need additional nutrient addition in those 12 counties where the chickens are grown. Looking at the O2 Ag Census data, dark blue on the left, acres that were reported as manured. If we applied it on a nitrogen basis, would be the maroon bar, the second one. Applying it in those counties on a phosphorus basis is this, the yellow bar in each set of four in these 12 counties. The light blue is the hay acres that were reported in the state. Poultry farmers tell us they grow chickens to support their cattle habitat in the state. On the bottom is the tons of litter that were calculated to be produced in each county according to the O2 census, and using an algorithm developed by our poultry science department. How much is it worth? I've stopped it off at 2005 because if you go up much higher, it sends the chicken farmers into ecstasy because they think they can sell it for a nice high price. And it didn't always work out that way. But this is based upon the reported fertilizer prices over time, discounting for a 50% nitrogen utilization rate. We were cooking along at about $26 a ton in 2005. So you can imagine what 2008 was looking at up in here. Another thing that we did to incorporate into our programming there's one slide that didn't get on here that's going to show you that where those chickens are and where the grow crops are two distinct different geographical locations. So we have a transportation issue that's again, as someone told me earlier today, brings in the possibility of enhanced carbon footprint if you have to invest significant resources into moving a litter from point A to point B. Repurposing research, looking at what we've done in the past. Back in the early days of more attention on nutrient management in Mississippi, we were looking at the possibility of decreased litter applications, increasing the need for poultry farmers with cattle operations to increase the use of inorganic nitrogen to produce their crops. So we call this the nitrogen substitution study, an experiment in two field experiments, one on a field with long-term litter application history and one with short-term or none. Basically what we were doing was showing, what we were attempting to do was to show the chicken growers that they could use inorganic nitrogen. What we repurposed this for in 2008 was to show the people who use inorganic fertilizers that they could use the organic fertilizer to replace the nitrogen. So, one other thing that helped us with this process was Dr. Lemus developed an Excel-based worksheet to look at pasture fertility recommendations. That's been a great teaching tool for us. One thing that has helped us do was to take some of the emotion out of using the poultry litter. We got a phone call from the northern part of the state that litter was available for $65 or $70 a ton. Would it be worth the investment for the row crop farmer to buy it? Rocky ran it through this decision tool, came knocking on my door, and he said, it doesn't work. What do you mean it doesn't work? Your program doesn't work? No. It's not a worthwhile investment to buy the poultry litter. We knew there had to be a point, that there is a point somewhere along the way where poultry litter, while it is an excellent fertilizer, poultry farmers told me years ago to make Bermuda grass grow on blacktop, that economics does have to play into it in some way. So anyway, that's available from us. I think also two other states, Florida, maybe Georgia, have adopted it for use too. Again, that's primarily a pasture-based program, but it does have this litter calculation embedded in it that helps us with row crop issues. Yeah, there's my picture. This is where the chickens are primarily. The row crops are over here. So you got to get the piles of poultry litter from here to there to use as a plant nutrient in row crop production. To compound things, down here in South Central Mississippi, the corresponding part of the South Delta is not as row crop or annual crop intensive as the northern part of the Delta. So there are no easy answers to anything. So with that, I thank you for your kind attention.
Time for one quick question.
I answered them all.
I have a question for you.
I was almost off.
You said early on that people have been using kind of the same pounds of N, P, and K for the last decade, but your productivity showed a pretty steep increase over the last decade. How are you accounting for that productivity increase with the same amount of nutrients?
I'm going to give part of that back to the plant geneticists because I'm a soils person, that they did increase the genetic base of the cotton that helped with that. And we're fine techniques, and I think probably an outstanding job by the Extension Service.
Thank you, Larry.